broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I didn't want him to quit because I think what he does for the people
Arizona
that
did not ask for this fight.
I think this guy, he doesn't want to leave it in peace. He doesn't want to leave the country in peace.
I am left with no other choice. So today,
come on, take it from Barack Obama.
Yeah. World famous Phil Hendry Show, Radio 4, Patriots by Patriots. As Arizona countersues the federal government over border security, we're talking about that tonight. The director of national intelligence claims the Muslim Brotherhood is secular. Plus, should Justice Clarence Thomas step down from judging the constitutionality of health care? Democrats seem to think so, and we'll be talking with Jack Armstrong, a liberal blogger for the Huffington Post, MoveOn.org, and a few others. General Galen Shaw and Jack Armstrong tonight. The Patriot Hotline, 877-876-7445. Our Patriot affiliates in Tampa at WHNZ 1250 AM. And in Valdosta, Georgia, WDDQ 92.1 FM on your dial here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And our website, philhendryshow.com, where we have our brand-new shot glasses as well as our best-of CDs, our legacy best-of CDs. And, of course, all of our podcasts, all of our archives, and live streaming video as well as live streaming audio of the show on the video tonight. Get a backstage pass and get with it. Get with us as we continue to fight this fight of patriotic conservatism. Justice Thomas has been called on by Democrats to recuse himself on health care constitutionality. Now, as chances grow that the Supreme Court will take up the constitutionality of the 2010 healthcare law, a political battle seems to be brewing, and it's over whether some justices should recuse themselves from what is likely to be a high-profile case. 74 House Democrats, led by New York Representative Anthony Weiner, sent a letter to Justice Thomas on Wednesday calling on him to sit out deliberations on the Affordable Health Care Act because of his wife's ties to a lobbying group that opposes the health care law. There's all kinds of hypocrisies that we're having to swallow. There's all kinds of hypocrisies that we're having to pass through our system like some poison. We every day, it seems, that we listen to our elected leaders saying the complete opposite of something they said the day before. All of a sudden, Clarence Thomas must recuse himself based upon the opinions of his wife. That's what this is about. Jack Armstrong joining us from the Twin Cities to talk with us about Clarence Thomas and the very, very strange opinion that he has to recuse himself because of the opinions of his wife. Jack, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I wish I was doing a little bit better. You know, this is an issue I've always been sort of, I feel is very important, you know, and I'm sorry to hear that you're not quite understanding what this is about, Phil, you know. And
well, you, when you say I don't understand what it's about.
Right.
I got a United States Supreme Court justice here, Clarence Thomas, who has been on the job almost 20 years now. I remember this man's, I remember vividly this man's confirmation hearings.
Right.
And they were not the most polite.
Well, no, they were not the most polite, but they were questions that had to be asked, you know, and
All the Anita Hill stuff and all of the pubic hair on the Coke can stuff, and until he came out with one of the great immortal lines of all time, when he said to Senator Kennedy, he said, "This is nothing more than a high-tech lynching." And he said that, I'll never forget the phrase, it has lived on in the lexicon of America and the world for that matter.
Well, it's a very dramatic phrase. There's no question about it. I think high-tech lynching, I have to tell you, I don't think there was one thing about what was happening to Clarence Thomas that was racist. I think that's the province. You know, you had some pretty interesting characters in your party. Jesse Helms was not what I would call the most open-minded of people.
I'm just telling you. You know, you talk about all you want about whoever in the Republican Party, but I'm telling you that at that time Clarence Thomas was attacked and vilified in ways I'd never heard a man who was being considered for the Supreme Court of the United States attacked. Sex. porn, sexual harassment.
Well, there was Anita Hill, who was a very believable witness. I think to this day she is, too, you know. But I don't want to fight that fight anymore, Phil.
No, I don't either, but I'm telling you that here's a guy that can't get a break.
Oh, no, I disagree. I think Clarence Thomas gets a lot of breaks, and I think he is, you know, here's a guy, Clarence Thomas, who, you know, you can call him, he's a brilliant man, but he is a man who, when there is a case that's to be heard before the Supreme Court, you know, he doesn't ask any questions. He sits there and lets the other justices ask the questions, you know, and then he somehow comes to some opinion based upon not asking no questions and just sitting there. Okay, I mean, if that's the man's opinion, okay. But let's face it, you know, he's married to a woman who is an attorney, Virginia Thomas. She founded a conservative group, the Liberty Central. She stepped down, true, in December amid the controversy over that memo calling for repeal of an unconstitutional law, health care. But the fact is, this guy, Clarence Thomas, is married to this woman. And the culture in the African-American community, men are it's a matriarchal society. And with a woman such as Virginia Thomas as your wife, it's not very hard to understand, you know, that she's going to have a influence on you.
So Clarence Thomas is a Supreme Court justice, a lawyer, a man of eminent credential. At the end of the day, because he's black, he's going to be...
No, I didn't say black. I didn't say black.
Yes, you said in the African-American community. What is the difference?
The difference is it's not a racial type. I'm talking more about a cultural difference. The cultural... You have to understand, Phil, you know, I come from the Balkans. I come from a very hard-pressed part of Europe, and I'm in a position, you know, even though I am technically Caucasian, I think I'm in a position to tell you a little bit more about what maybe an African-American is going to be thinking about. And
I'm not. Okay, I'll tell you what, let's not go there, okay, because I don't want to get into a whole argument.
Well, we don't have to go there, you know, anywhere, but I'm just trying to tell you something that you probably don't know.
I'm aware of the matriarchal nature of many black families. I'm aware of the subsections and subcultures existent in our country. But what you're telling me is an attorney, a federal judge, a Supreme Court justice, is basing an opinion on the constitutionality of the health care law. He's basing it on his wife.
I'm telling you that Clarence Thomas... you know, he is a man who has this opinion because his wife has this opinion. He has it in for some of these liberals, I think, as well, who gave him this hard time that you're talking about.
So not only does he have this opinion because his wife has this opinion, he has an opinion about the unconstitutionality of health care because of prejudice.
No, I didn't say prejudice. You said prejudice.
No, you said a prejudice against some of the individuals that gave him a hard time during his Supreme Court hearing.
Yes, exactly. He has a... I think it's a more... it would be stupid of us not to think that Clarence Thomas has an opportunity here to take down two or three or four or however many or even the whole liberal elite, you know, with a ruling, the same people that made life... literally hell for this guy, you know, that you say anyway. I don't think they did, but if that's the feeling over on their right side, you know, that this guy's got some payback coming. So Clarence Thomas, to me, the water is too polluted. There's been too many things that gone under the bridge for him to have an objective opinion.
All right, we're talking here with Jack Armstrong. Our number is 877-876-7445, our Patriot hotline, 877-876-PHIL, about Clarence Thomas and when health care eventually, if it does get to the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas should not hear any of the arguments and should not be in on writing any of the opinions because Clarence Thomas has a wife who has an opinion of health care that it's unconstitutional.
No, but that's not the only argument that I gave you.
No, I know, and you're also saying that Clarence Thomas is a guy that's got it in for the other, for the liberals, and that he is going to, in other words, come to conclusions based upon stupidity.
You know, Phil, you want me to say that. You said that. I didn't say that, you know.
But you're saying that Clarence Thomas is going to base his opinions on the health care law because he's not very bright, because he takes his marching orders from his wife, and because...
I didn't say that the man is not bright. Listen to what I'm saying. You know, a lot of conservatives spend so much time talking, I'm not trying to indict you, Phil, but I said that Clarence Thomas is a judge that has never really showed himself to be much of a brilliant constitutional Supreme Court justice, and now you got this guy with a wife who is believing that it's unconstitutional, and he may be overly influenced by her because of the place that the woman plays in a black family, and also, yeah, he may have it in for some of these liberals.
All right, let's talk about Elena Kagan, who left the White House.
Oh, it's a different story completely.
But no, it's not a different story completely. Some liberals would like her to recuse herself because she is a liberal who spent time as a solicitor general in the White House.
It's completely different. It's completely different, and that's not really what I want to talk about. You know, I came on your program to talk about Justice Thomas. And
why don't you want to talk about Elena Kagan?
Because it's not about Justice Thomas, number one, and it's completely, she's got legitimate reasons to stay. You know,
well, here's one legitimate reason. She's a liberal, you're a liberal, so you want her to stay.
No, that's got nothing to do with it. I'm saying that I don't want to talk about Elena Kagan because that's not what we're going to talk about, you know?
You don't want to talk about Elena Kagan because I'm going to hold your feet to the fire just like we're talking about...
No, you're not going to hold my feet to the fire.
Yeah, that's just like we're talking about Thomas here.
No, you're not going to hold my feet to the fire, no.
Then why don't you want to tell me why Elena Kagan shouldn't be recused because she was a solicitor general in the Obama White House?
Because that's not the big story. The big story here is Thomas and his wife and the fact that he had a very controversial, like you said, confirmation hearing. And Elena Kagan, that's what they use, you know, to confuse the issue and to get you off of Clarence Thomas.
Why is Clarence Thomas the only issue?
Because Clarence Thomas, are you kidding? I mean, look at, that guy attracts lightning. He is with a Coke can, with a pubic hair, all down to...
That was a long time ago. Why is it all about Clarence Thomas now?
Because the man has a history of being outside the mainstream. He is a little bit of, I guess you want to call, a little bit of an oddball, you know, like Souter was an oddball. This guy...
Why is he an oddball?
You got a lot of questions, you know.
Yeah, why is he an oddball?
Who, Thomas?
Yeah.
Because this guy doesn't ask any questions. I think there's a lot needs to be asked about Clarence Thomas before we get around to Elena Kagan.
All right. Hold on, because I got a few more questions for you, Jack. That's for sure. Jack Armstrong, liberal blogger on Clarence Thomas. He believes that Clarence Thomas should... recuse. That means remove himself from any discussion of the health care law because his wife believes it's unconstitutional, because Clarence Thomas may have it in for liberal, senators, because Clarence Thomas is an oddball and he doesn't want to talk about Elena Kagan. We'll be back here, Radio 4 Patriots, by Patriots, 877-876-7445. Let's put this guy's feet to the fire tonight. Jack Armstrong, liberal blogger. And tell us why you believe, if we're going to talk about Clarence Thomas, I think we ought to talk about Elena Kagan, there's no question. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, Radio 4 Patriots by Patriots. Our Patriot line is 877-876-7445. Clarence Thomas, and let's put Jack on hold for a minute because Jack, I know you're on hold, but I want to get this said. Clarence Thomas weathered one of the most vicious confirmation processes, hearings, if you will, in the history of the United States Senate, to the point where he himself characterized it as a high-tech lynching. Clarence Thomas was nominated to the United States Supreme Court by George Bush Sr. In large measure, yes, because we had lost Thurgood Marshall, an African-American justice, but also because Clarence Thomas was eminently qualified, was a man with impeccable credentials, and they trotted out this woman, Anita Hill, and these attacks as low and as base as you could possibly imagine, sexual harassment, pornographic movies, and so forth, to impugn this man. Now, 20 years later, the liberals have got a problem with him. The liberal problem with Clarence Thomas is his wife. Not him, his wife. The liberal problem with Clarence Thomas is that the black man may be under the influence of the white matriarch. And that Clarence Thomas has a long memory and therefore wants payback on some of the liberals that humiliated him. And why wouldn't he? But they don't even want to attribute to him any kind of maturity or decency. His mind is made up. If his wife is against it, then he's against it, and he's an oddball, and so on and so forth. And it has continued, and it's just amazing. And, Jack, I'll let you, you know, respond, but I think it's just amazing, you know, that liberals have cornered the market on the understanding and forbearing white man.
What are you talking about, you know?
What I'm talking about is the idea that not a one of you guys is racist at all, and yet I'm bringing up to you the treatment of Clarence Thomas down through the years.
No, there's no racist treatment of Clarence Thomas at all. No racist treatment of Clarence Thomas at all. What we're saying is that...
What do you call it then, man, when you are... You just said to me, in the black family, the white woman, or not...
I didn't say white woman.
You said women, matriarchal that they are, they're going to influence the thinking of their husbands.
That's not racist. That's about the matriarchal nature of a family.
And that this guy's mind is going to be bent by it.
You know, I'd like to finish what I'm saying, if you don't mind, Mr. Henry. You bring me on your program to comment on this, you know.
I brought you on my program to comment on it. I want you to comment about Elena Kagan.
Well, that's not what we're going to do tonight, you know.
Whoa, hold on, man.
No, you brought me on your program.
You know that I told you that I wanted to talk about the Supreme Court and the... And the confirmations.
You said to me that this would be okay. You know, look, I'll talk about Elena Kagan if you want to, but let me tell you, it's got nothing whatsoever to do with Clarence Thomas and the oddball nature of this guy. You know, I don't have anything against Clarence Thomas, but I do have something against any man who is sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States of my country, America. You know, and is going to make a decision about the health care law that is going to help people. Millions of Americans need health care. They can't make it without it. And Clarence Thomas, who is taking his marching orders from his wife, you know, because of the matriarchal nature. Yeah, that's right. I said the matriarchal nature of the black family. And because he's got to get some payback, you know, against the liberals that humiliated him, he's going to keep people from having the health care that they need. And to me, that's wrong.
Okay, and then but we can't talk about Elena Kagan, who is going to support this. You know, let's just say that I believe she's going to support it.
Yeah, well, that's just it. You don't know. She's a Supreme Court justice. You don't know. You know.
Well, then how do you know what Clarence Thomas is going to do?
The thing of it is this, okay?
You just told me that Elena Kagan. I can't say how she's going to vote, right?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay, why?
That's not a very informed way of looking at it. This is a member of the Supreme Court, okay? And I know what you're going to say. You're going to say to me, then why don't I look at Clarence Thomas the same way? And I can't, you know, because it's different. He's a conservative, which means, by definition, he's a guy that is going to... You have to make the assumption when you think of anybody who's a conservative... And I don't understand why more people don't think this way. You have to make the assumption, when anyone is a conservative, you have to say they're going to be a conservative, which means they don't want to change the status quo. And with Elena Kagan, she's a liberal. That means that her mind is open. And,
oh, that doesn't mean anything of the sort. You know that, and I know that. It means that the Elena Kagan's mind certainly isn't open as a liberal to the possibilities inherent in foreign policy. We know that liberals have long proven themselves to be 19th century thinkers when it comes to the possibilities inherent in foreign policy. All right, let's take a break. With me here is Jack Armstrong on the Phil Hendry Show as we talk about Clarence Thomas and the fact that he should recuse, or the opinion that some liberals have, that he should recuse himself from being on the Supreme Court decision, or in on the Supreme Court decision regarding health care, that his conservatism will keep people from, keep him from voting the right way on it, and that his wife has an opinion against it anyway. Our number is 877-876-7445. Health care. Let's go. Let's talk about it. Otherwise, Clarence Thomas is gone, man. He's gone from the discussion.
Well, he ain't done.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445 as we talk about Clarence Thomas and the liberals and Democrats in Congress who want him off of any decision-making with regard to health care if it goes to the Supreme Court. And I have with me Jackson Armstrong, who is a liberal blogger. Now, we were talking about Clarence Thomas, and you've avoided talking about Elena Kagan, who's a liberal judge, but... You don't think she's got anything to do with it, but you've agreed at least to discuss her a little bit?
Well, yeah, I've agreed to discuss her, but here's the number one situation you have to understand. Clarence Thomas, as much as some people think he's a darling of the conservative movement or Republican Party, a lot of people, and I'm talking about conservatives now, they don't even know who he is. They don't even know who he is. They don't even know he's on the Supreme Court. The people who are aware that Clarence Thomas is on the Supreme Court are mostly the liberals and Democrats, you know, who opened the door for a black Supreme Court justice with Thurgood Marshall, you know. So,
all right. Well, we'll start handing out the brownie points on that one a little bit later on.
No, there's no handing out no brownie points. You know, I'm just saying to you that you're talking up Clarence Thomas, and most conservatives and Democrats, conservatives and Republicans, they don't know who he is, you know. Right now, you have in the Republican Party, you have a split, you know, with Ron Paul, you know.
Yeah.
There's a split there. Those people, Ron Paul's people, you know, they think Dick Cheney's a war criminal. I mean, your party out of control, you know.
All right, let's get off that kick, man, whether conservatives know who Clarence Thomas is or not. Let's talk about Elena Kagan. Can we do that now?
Sure, I don't mind to talk about her. You know, I just didn't know you want to, you know, if you want to try to make some comparison.
Yeah, I do want to make a comparison. Elena Kagan was the Solicitor General in the Obama White House. Now, look, Jack, you can run, but you can't hide, okay?
I'm not running from nothing.
Okay. All right, but Elena Kagan was the Solicitor General in the Obama White House. Elena Kagan is now a Supreme Court justice. She was in the Obama White House during all of the discussions of the Obama administration, I should say, during all of the discussions, the formative discussions of healthcare legislation, and so on. Why is it not reasonable to assume she'll be prejudiced going in as a liberal judge?
Because as a liberal judge, you got to understand that she's more open-minded about it.
Okay, so are we going to have to...
I'd like to finish what I'm going to say.
But we're going to go along with the definition liberal. That means open-minded.
Yeah, I think liberal means open-minded. Let me tell you something. Elena Kagan is in a work environment, and as such, she was in a work environment in Obama White House, and she's a liberal. Clarence Thomas is a conservative. The definition of a liberal is a person who has an open mind and is forward-moving, and the definition of a conservative, you know, is someone who's conservative. I mean, they're not going to move. They're going to stay, you know, planted in the same place, you know. So you put those two together, Elena Kagan can be in an environment where there's lots of discussion about health care legislation, but she's not going to be influenced near the way Justice Thomas is, you know.
Wait, why would she not be influenced if she's a liberal and she's got an open mind, she'd be more prone to be influenced than a conservative who's very rigid.
No, because the definition of a liberal is not just open mind. It doesn't mean that you're...
Yeah, see, you didn't take that into consideration in your discussion era, Jack, I don't think.
What are you talking about?
The fact that a liberal is an open-minded person, you're very willing to make that argument, but you're not willing to say an open-minded person is also somebody who could be very susceptible to suggestion. Suggestible, as they call it, I believe, in the world of hypnosis.
Great. So a liberal is someone who is... you know, you conservatives constantly amaze me. You saying a liberal is someone who is like a mindless robot?
Well, sometimes, yeah. As a matter of fact, I shouldn't even say sometimes. Yeah, all the time. I think that liberals are mindless robots because
You got some pair on you to say something like that. You know, the way that conservatives are lockstep, especially that Tea Party, which is a bunch of robots, if ever I saw them.
All right, let's get off of the personal characterization. It's not getting us anywhere, and it's not really important. What I wanted, I'm simply saying to you, there is no open-mindedness at all about Elena Kagan. There's nothing on the liberal side of the equation that would say, if we're going to attack Justice Thomas, then why don't we go after, why don't we at least hear what they have to say about Kagan?
Well, because Thomas has a wife that is an attorney, so there's a lot of professional pressure and power on that. I just think I'd completely reject that Elena Kagan should even be part of this. A liberal, the people who wrote the health care program are the people who are I believe, understand the issue. And when you throw in a guy like Clarence Thomas who doesn't ask any questions anyway, and then he's got a wife, Victoria Thomas, who is pressuring every day. She come home and she's talking to Clarence and she's saying, you know, unconstitutional, until he can't stand it anymore.
Well, you don't know what's going on in their house.
Well, I would be very, very surprised if that's not the situation.
You don't know what's going on in their house. You know, she's coming home and saying, Clarence, you know, healthcare.
I would be very surprised if that's not the situation. I think that man is under incredible pressure, unbelievable pressure from that woman to say it's unconstitutional. And if you don't agree with me, you know how it is, man. Women hold all kinds of the cards, you know, in a marriage. You know, cut him off, you know.
Oh, come on, man. Why can't we have a little class here?
I'm just talking about just a man and a woman at night when there's nobody around. And she says to him, you know, how you going to go with that? I'm not going to vote. You know, I may vote for it. I don't know. And she says, that's it. You know, we're cutting the water off, you know.
All right, so whenever we're talking about Clarence Thomas, man, we got to go down that road, huh?
I'm telling you
that your reasoning and your thinking is ridiculous when it comes to Clarence Thomas's reasons for voting, and we don't even know how he's going to vote, do we?
Well, I don't tell me he's going to vote in favor. If it ever gets down to it.
Well, it's happened before, Jack, and you know it as well as I do that in the Supreme Court of the United States. Has disappointed many presidents who have tried to put their justice in here or there, a liberal, a conservative, somewhere along the line, and the next thing you know, they're not voting the way that they wanted them to. Earl Warren, one of the earliest examples of that, all the way on down the line. We'll see what happens. Jack Armstrong, thank you, Jack, for being with us.
All right, but you know, keep in mind what I said to you about Clarence Thomas. We'll find out what role his wife is going to play.
Thanks a lot, man. I can't keep listening to that. All right, our number is 877-876-7445. General Galen Shaw coming up next hour to talk about immigration. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for patriots by patriots. Well, you just heard a very interesting discussion there about a Supreme Court justice named Clarence Thomas, who many Democrats believe is incapable of hearing any arguments concerning the constitutionality of health care because his wife is a conservative lawyer, and she is going to influence his thinking. And Elena Kagan, of course, was a solicitor general in the Obama White House, and as I mentioned to Jack, you know, was privy to the very beginning stages of the health care discussion within the White House, and she's just fine. You know, nobody really sees any problem with that. Well, we'll see how all of that plays out, but it's a it's a very, very weak approach to try to get a guy to recuse himself because his wife, you can't be serious. There's got to be something else going on. Obviously, they realize this is going to go to the Supreme Court. This challenge, this judge in Florida that ruled the health care unconstitutional, Democrats are going to sit there and take that. They'll continue to challenge it all the way to the Supreme Court and they're trying to, I don't know, water the field or something and get people ready for it. All right, coming up, we will talk about Arizona immigration and the fact that Arizona is countersuing the federal government. And we're going to have with us General Galen Shaw to talk about why that, you know, all of that, in his opinion, is a waste of time. General Shaw believes that a state trying to protect its own borders is a laughable thing. Now, multiculturalism has failed, according to French President Nicolas Sarkozy. Here's a guy that came along at a time when we were being told the world is against America. The world is not going in America's direction. The world is going completely, and this is an area here on Radio 4 Patriots by Patriots. This is an area where we're very, very strong. And when I say very, very strong, what I'm saying is basically we know what we're talking about. Most other shows don't. And that is foreign affairs, foreign policy. Nicolas Sarkozy came along at a time when people said America had no friends. Because the world isn't going America's way. The world is rejecting America's leadership. The world is rejecting America's leadership because America's morality is somehow suspect. America's values and principles are somehow suspect. And what do we have? Nicolas Sarkozy in France. Now, it just doesn't get any dumber than that in terms of the perception of some in this country when you say that the world, why, look at the French, and look at how they've rejected us, and look at how the French are disgusted by us when we had our freedom fries, and weren't we laughable? Well, what happened? The people of France got a little concerned about affairs within their own country, a lot of it having to do with immigration, a lot of it having to do with the economy, and they put in place a bona fide conservative, Nicolas Sarkozy. A guy that wants to get rid of Muslim wear for women. A guy that is now saying openly that multiculturalism has failed. And it isn't just in France, Germany, Great Britain now. Well, what happened to the view that America was somehow being seen as it was being deserted by the rest of the world because America was like a blind man trying to lead people whose eyes were newly opened? What happened to that? Well, the initial belief and opinion was wrong. The initial opinion by many in this country that we've really lost it now, man. I mean, the world is looking at us like we are just the most decrepit and morally degenerate nation the world has ever seen. We have lost it. All those people saw it wrong. And you talk about a bandwagon.
I'm going to say, man, everybody jump a bandwagon and like one on top of the other, on top of the other.
What about the sign the guy had?
What sign?
The guy, world, we're sorry.
Oh, yes, world, we're sorry. You remember that one? Sorry, we elected. Who's the guy that held that sign up? I mean, I bet you he's proud of that even to this day. Can you imagine an American holding up a sign that says, sorry, world, when George Bush got elected? We're apologizing to who? Who are we apologizing to? Who? Most people say the first thing out of their mouth, France. France, oh really, France? Well, take a look at France, man. And the Middle East. Let's not forget the Middle East. Let's not forget the Middle East. The Middle East. Oh, you can't be shoving this democracy stuff down their throats. Don't you understand that these are tribal people? Don't you understand that these are nomadic people? They don't even come from an orientation where there are nation states. They come from an orientation where they still water their camels here, and then they go over here for their winter camp, and it's all Lawrence of Arabia, you know?
Yeah, they think that, like, the Arabs are moving all around and everything.
Right. and that all of these artificial borders that were constructed at the end of the First World War are just that, the First World War are just that, and you'll never be able to. And then all of a sudden, what do we see? I realize it's not an Arab state. It is a, quote, Persian state, but it is an Islamic state. And what did we see? The Green Revolution of June of 2009. We saw young people, we saw westernized young people and others in that country asking for a democratic form of government, a Western-style democratic form of government. Now, how do you feel when you're a liberal in the United States of America talking all that garbage, and all of a sudden, here comes Iran? As I'm going to tell you something right now. They're looking at the conservatives in America as aiders and abettors to an autocracy and a dictatorship in Egypt. What do you think you progressives were during the Green Revolution in Iran?
Man, that's a good point.
I know it's a good point.
That's a real good point, man. Not a one of them said nothing.
They didn't say a word. They didn't want... No. Stay out of their business. Stay out of their business. Stay out of their business. Obama was getting hit with that message left and right. People were screaming at Obama to make a stronger statement on Iran. And he got the message from the liberals, you better just back it down a notch, man. We don't want to get into that fight. That's going to make us look like a horse's ass. All of a sudden, we're promoting democracy in the Middle East. Well, that's what you can't say you're doing now. Let me tell you one of the reasons why nobody wants to talk about democracy in the Middle East, unless it's with major caveats, because of something called Iraq, which in the mind of every progressive so-called, every so-called liberal, is the biggest mistake that we've made since My Lai. It's the biggest mistake we've made since the Civil War. Getting involved in Iraq, getting involved in taking out a terror-sponsoring regime in the heart of the Middle East by a guy who had been a ward of the international community for 12 years. Yeah, you damn right we did, and we, you know, went in and did our own inspection.
I like the fact we went and did our own inspection. They say there's no WMDs. I say, well, how do you know?
Yeah, well, that's what I tell people. They say, well, you know, they really didn't find any WMDs. You wouldn't have found that out, man, had we not gone in and kicked a little ass. You're talking about no WMDs. Don't tell me you knew. You didn't. The only time people, these progressives, knew is when they found out by way of the United States military. That's how you found out. That's what I call Iraq. I call that one big inspection. And for the people will say, a lot of people died, Mr. Henry. I understand that. And the feckless and weak argument about, you know, this guy's a draft dodger and that guy's a draft dodger. This is a country making a foreign policy decision based upon things that have happened to this nation, based upon things that are emanating from the Middle East that are damn serious. And we do have a military for a reason. So nobody wanted to say anything about Iran because Iran, that's a democracy, but that's like the Islamic Republic. What are you talking about, man? There can't be no... Are you telling me there's a... Yeah, that's exactly what we're telling you. They want democracy over there. That Islamic Republic, man, that thing's a joke, Jack. That thing's strictly from hunger. Get out of here with that guy with the mullah and all that jazz. That is the 16th century. And that's what you cats have been backing up. So they say to the conservatives, what are you backing up but a good old-fashioned 20th century style tin horn dictator? Maybe. Maybe. The United States has never, ever lied about the fact that we make foreign policy decisions based upon what we see as the smartest decision to make at that particular moment with regard to the security of our country and the resources that we access either here or other places. And so we have found ourselves at times in bed with some, shall we say, questionable people. And once we've used them up, then we've used them up, and guess where they wind up? Well, in the case of Noriega, he's in jail. Somoza died on foreign soil, so did the Shah. These people become dispensable. That's how the ball game is played. That's how the greatest country in the history of the world survives in what sometimes is a poisonous and very dangerous environment called the world. And America gets all of the notoriety because France, Britain, Germany, Russia, Japan, Australia, our friends in Canada, they're all doing it. They're all out there making friends. But we get most of the ink because we're the biggest target. So let's start talking like adults. Let's start talking like adults. Let's put talking like children.
Like, everything would be just beautiful if Uncle Sam would go away. Uncle Sam, he didn't even invent the game. Well, I'm talking about the British. The British invent. My God, the British. The French. The British were was running a game, an international game of colonialism and imperialism that taught us a lot of the ropes and many other countries around the world. The British carved up the Middle East. We didn't. The British coaxed us into a coup d'etat in Iran in 1951 or 52, whenever it was. Our CIA went out. We said, okay, we'll help you guys out. You're the British. You are allies in World War II. The war's been over 7 years. What the hell do we know? We're going to go in there and, because the British said to us, this is going to destabilize the oil supplies. They want to put a commie in here. You know what the commies are? Everything was commie. Everything today? Islamist. And until such time as someone can prove that we don't have a problem, because, excuse me, we just had 3,000 people butchered alive before our eyes by Islamists, so you'll pardon us if we're a little suspect.
So true, man.
All right, I didn't even get to multiculturalism.
I don't care, man. That was perfect, man. I'm glad you brought up Iran, too.
All right, well, we'll get back here on the show. And coming up, we have General Shaw, right?
Yeah, I got him online, too.
General Shaw on immigration and Arizona. And don't forget our Patriot line, always open, 877-876-7445. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for patriots by patriots.
Phil Hendry.
By patriot and American.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Arizona did not ask for this fight.
The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term.
We are witnessing history unfold.
I didn't want him to quit because I think what he does.
Teabagging Queen Rachel Maddow.
This calls for a spanking.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Radio for patriots by patriots. And welcome as we continue to, on this show at least, we continue to give you a just about the most direct line to what's happening in this country than any other show probably in the history of the medium. This hour, Arizona countersues the federal government over border security. Joining us to discuss that is going to be General Galen Shaw. He's a retired United States Army general who has worked not only in the field of tactics and the operational art and strategies regarding the military on foreign soil, but also has advised on security matters here in the United States. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, you could go online to philhendryshow.com and watch live streaming video of this radio show each and every night between 10 and 1, 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. Pacific time. So that would be 1 to 4 on the East Coast, as well as going into our shop where we have our best of CDs and our shot glasses for sale. We got more merchandise to roll out before the summer months. And always a good time to have General Galen Shaw on the show. General, how are you, sir?
Phil, I'm much, much better than I was about a week ago. I had a little bit of what you had had last year. And that was the...
Was that what, the swine flu?
I had a little bit of the flu. I don't know if it was... I don't think it was swine flu. I think they would have told me. But it was flat on my back for a period of about 3 days. And so I'm very glad to be back at it and talking to you this evening. It's always a great pleasure.
Thank you very much, sir. General...
And by the way, Phil, if you want to call me Galen or Gay, you can call me that... in the sense that that's my name,
No, I know. It's not any description of you.
It's not any description yet that I know of. I haven't been a general for a long time, but I do appreciate it.
Well, that's kind of the way I like to refer to you. I know you're retired. You know Dale Dye.
I know Dale very well, yes.
I still refer to him as captain, even though he's out. It's something you guys have earned.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
General, Arizona is countersuing the federal government over border security. And we're going to listen to Governor Jan Brewer here. She's talking to the media and others, and she says she's taking on the federal government over this border security issue.
Teabagging Queen Rachel.
Oh, come on, will you, bud?
Right.
Here is Jan, teabagging queen. Here is Jan, where is that man? Jan Brewer, who is the governor of the state of Arizona.
I am left with no other choice. So today, I am announcing that the state of Arizona is filing a counterclaim against the federal government for failing to uphold its constitutional and statutory obligations.
Here is Governor Brewer now saying she's got no choice but to take this legal action.
Arizona did not ask for this fight with the federal government to secure our border and to enforce our immigration laws. We did not want this fight. We did not start this fight. But now that we are in it, Arizona will not rest until our border is secured and federal immigration laws are enforced.
And we got a lot of noise
and
in that.
And we will most likely...
All right, let me turn that off because we've got a lot of noise in that audio, and I'm not sure I know what that is. There's no description here offered as to what that noisy, noisy background is that she's contending with. General, do you know?
I don't know. I would imagine it's some kind of a demonstration, but I don't know.
All right, and nonetheless, you hear her very clearly saying she has no choice. The governor announced on Thursday her state has filed this countersuit against the federal government seeking the authority to implement its own border security efforts. Last year, Brewer signed the controversial measure known as SB 1070 into law, which, among other things, would require local law enforcement in Arizona to apprehend and help deport illegal immigrants. The Obama administration sued, arguing only the federal government has that authority and won a temporary injunction blocking the law. What is your stand on this?
Well, I think you know, Phil, that my stand is going to be very clearly coming down on the side of the federal government, and I will tell you why. Number one, we're going to get around to securing Arizona's borders just as soon as we make sure the rest of this country is taken care of in terms of economy, in terms of the two wars that we still, and I say two wars, we actually are involved in one actively now. But we do assist the Iraqi government and the Iraqi people in the securing of their nation. So our military is engaged, and many of those young men and women engaged are members of the National Guard, which would be part and parcel of this further use of border security. Now, we've got an awful lot on our plate, and we're going to get around to helping Arizona. But I think Arizona is in a state of panic, which I think is uncustomary for a state run by a governor there, Governor Brewer, who, if you listen to her voice, there's not a lot of confidence. Her voice cracks and is a bit shaky, and I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know what you're talking about with Governor Brewer's voice.
You can hear in the voice of the governor there the kind of tremor that you would hear in someone who perhaps is drinking, and I.
That's not fair. I mean, why would you even begin to impugn the woman's character?
This is not impugning character. This is someone who is, in my opinion, not dealing with reality the way she should. And
What is she not doing? You said you're going to get around to it, which I guess means.
What it means is this: that Arizona needs to understand that they are in a state of hysteria. Now, what do we do when we have someone in a state of hysteria? A lot of times you hand them a paper bag and you tell them to start breathing some carbon dioxide and to get a hold of themselves. Well, you can't do that with an entire state. And I certainly would not say that with the governor. I think the governor she's a fine governor, but she's got her hands full with a state that is in a hysterical state, and the way she's dealing with it is what I'm questioning right now.
Well, you're way off base with that question, sir, asking about whether someone is drinking. Look, if she is...
I don't think I am, but we don't have to go down that road if you don't want to.
No, I don't want to go down that road. Here, when you say that Arizona is hysterical or dealing with the immigration issue like a hysterical person, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, Phil, it's very obvious that Mexico has absorbed the brunt of the violence. It just is not that big of a deal on U.S. soil. If you want to talk about the violence that has been perpetrated, you look at the state of Texas has had to absorb far more than the state of Arizona. Mexico has seen killings and stabbings, kidnappings, beheadings. Mexico has seen its publicly elected officials executed and found the next day dead or made a display or an example of. It is a terrible situation. The United States, for its part, in dealing with immigration, has a problem, but it is not a problem that is so egregious that the United States government is supposed to ignore the Constitution. And the other reason I would give, Phil, is that Arizona cannot take this on. They do not have the resources, and it's laughable to think that any state can.
And all right, you're speaking here. Constitutionally, you say they can't do it. But Arizona is saying something here. They're saying that the federal government is not doing its job.
Well, it depends on what you call doing your job. Why don't you let us do our job? And don't tell us how to do our job. Why don't you allow the federal government to marshal its resources to see exactly what the problem is?
Well, this is a very serious situation, and the governor of the state of Arizona would like the federal government to take it on post-haste, you know, I mean, as fast as they possibly can.
Well, I'm sure that they do, Phil, and I'm sure you in business know something else, that there's, you know, my schedule, there's your schedule, and then there's the schedule. The federal government, I take it, should drop everything for the state of Arizona. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying the federal government should drop everything for the state of Arizona. I'm saying that if Arizona is feeling that there is a serious need here...
Well, that is what I question. And if there is a serious need...
Well, what you question? Look, this is the governor of the state. Who knows her state better than the governor?
Well, relax, Bill, because, you know, I'm not saying that you're being hysterical, but your reaction is similar to the people of Arizona. They're carrying on... They're talking a high-pitched voice. I've listened to some of the talk programming in that state. They're grown men who are ordinarily very, I suppose they have very deep voices. You'll hear grown men screeching like women on many of these talk programming shows. And I'm saying to the people of Arizona, get a grip and quit being hysterical about this.
What do you say to a governor, I don't mean to interrupt you, but what do you say to a governor who knows her state better than anybody else, certainly better than you, General, better than I, and she says this is a problem and we need the problem resolved, and the federal government says, no, it isn't, and we'll get there when you feel like getting there, and...
No, we haven't said we'll get there when we feel like getting there. We'll get there when we have the time.
When you have the time or whatever it may be, and then she says, well, guess what, man? I can't wait. I'm suing you.
Well, everybody has their own timetable, and because Jan Brewer... is in a state of panic over the fact that her constituents are themselves hysterical, I don't think that means you undertake a hysterical action.
Do you think that this countersuit that she is contemplating here is a hysterical action?
I believe that it has elements of hysteria. From what I understand of hysteria, and I got out a physician's desk reference last night, and I also cross-referenced that with a book on psychology because I wanted to know what I was talking about.
Darryl, are you telling me, I don't mean to interrupt you, are you telling me you got out a psychology manual in order to understand the problem with Arizona and immigration because you aren't taking them seriously? You think they got a mental problem there?
I don't know, Phil, whether you're just being angry for effect or whether you're really angry, but I don't like being pressured the way you're pressuring me.
I don't mean to pressure you, sir. I'm asking you a question. Are you saying that these people are emotionally disturbed?
I'm saying that in the state of Arizona, with regard to the immigration issue, there is a level of hysteria bordering on panic. And I don't know whether you want to call it a panic attack. I don't think it is. I think it's a hysterical reaction that's having its effect on a governor who, when I hear the woman speak, I can definitely hear the voice cracking and other manifestations of someone who may be drinking to excess.
All right, so this is what you do. You come on a radio show like mine, and you say Arizona ain't got no problem. They got a governor that drinks too much, and the people are hysterical.
I think you put it in a very unfair way. I think what
I'm... Isn't that what you said?
No, what I said was Arizona will be taken care of by the federal government. Arizona's problems are not the most serious problems we have to deal with right now. Arizona would be well advised not to take this problem on because they do not have the resources. They do not have the, I don't believe, the law enforcement skill or knowledge. And ultimately, I'm saying that, yes, they should stop acting like hysterical individuals.
All right, General Shaw, we'll get back at you here.
I have no doubt that you will.
Yeah, well, no, we will. General Galen Shaw on Arizona's concerns. Arizona's countersuing the federal government. The federal government sued them saying, you can't enforce the border, and they've countersued saying, yes, we can. And General Galen Shaw says that Arizona's problems are not so serious that they can't wait for the federal government to formulate a response. On top of that, Jan Brewer sounds like she's drinking too much, and the people of Arizona are getting hysterical. 877-876-7445, radio for Patriots by Patriots. Hey, Arizona, are you hysterical? Do you have the vapors? Do you need to sit down? We'll be back at it here in a moment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show here, radio for Patriots by Patriots, as we talk about patriotic conservatism on our program, and we have with us here General Galen Shaw. What do you think of that, General?
Well, I told you during the break, I thought that the idea of patriotic conservatism I don't know what it means. I'm more of a Wesley Clark kind of military man. I believe in a new kind of patriotism. And the new kind of patriotism means that we look to Washington, D.C. as the capital of the country. And if we have a problem, we make sure we understand that the problem is one that does not necessarily mean we have to run and get, have Daddy take care of it right away. But at the same time, we certainly do want it taken care of.
Well, what is that? I don't know what that means.
What don't you understand?
Well, what does that mean if we have a problem, we don't want Daddy to... What?
I'm telling you that the era in the context of what we're talking about tonight... The Arizona problem, the immigration problem in Arizona, is that you have to, if you're the governor of a state particularly, don't panic the people of your state with a wobbly and shaky speech, one that sounds to me as if she needed to steady herself with a cup of coffee. And I understand that what I'm saying may be taken by some people as a terrible slander. I don't mean that, but that's the way Governor Brewer sounds to me. And that she's making these comments about needing to bring her own security to bear on a situation in the state because it's so out of control, she's panicking the people of Arizona. And I don't think that's what a governor should do.
All right, I'll refrain from an opinion for just a second here. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Richard in San Antonio. Richard, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, Phil. I appreciate the privilege and the freedom to speak on your show.
Yes, sir.
My comment first is it's not the governor that is making the people panic on illegal immigration. It's us seeing that these illegal immigrants are coming over, committing crimes, they're taking our tax dollars, they're bankrupting our ER rooms, they're going to school for free.
Sir, can I make a comment, Phil?
Well, the gentleman's still talking.
Well, I heard that the gentleman is from Texas. I don't see Texas running amok and getting and squealing about needing to take care of their own borders.
No, we are talking about it. You're just not hearing it.
No, where is your governor then? Why isn't the governor?
Because Governor Perry is not doing his job like the governor of Arizona is doing.
Governor Perry is sitting
in his high chair while this blue collar. Why the blue collars out here are working harder, working longer to support these illegal aliens coming over. And
I heard that Governor Perry was so popular they were going to secede from the union at one point, weren't they? Because Governor Perry is so popular.
Well, what are you saying? This is a gentleman.
Just sit back and just wait our turn until we got 20 million illegal aliens, and you're telling us to sit back and let another 20 million come over.
No, sir, I'm not saying that, but I am saying
if you don't live in one of these border states, then you don't understand the situation that we are going through, and you don't see it firsthand what these illegal aliens are doing.
Sir, I do live in a border state. It's not a border state that you would respect, but I can guarantee you we have similar problems, and I can tell.
Where do you live?
I live in Washington State. I live in Washington State.
That is not near a border state.
You don't even come close to living in a border state. Do you know where Canada is? Do you know where Canada is? Just let me ask that. You know where Canada is, right? I am strictly talking about the border state of Mexico.
Whoa. What did you say, racist?
I think it's racist of this gentleman.
What do you mean racist? I am not talking racist.
I am talking about the border of Mexico, which is the border of Arizona.
And that's where the problems are. That's where the violence is. Yeah. Richard, thank you so much for your call. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots, talking to General Galen Shaw. The people of Arizona need to relax. They're hysterical. The federal government will get around to it. Our number 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for Patriots by Patriots. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. General Galen Shaw joining us on the issue of border security, and the subject is Arizona, and the opinion is of General Shaw. You know, you're talking about a whole state of people being hysterical, which... You know, is not only is it insulting, and then to say that the governor of that state sounds like she's been drinking, it is also, it sounds like the flimsiest defense of an inept federal government, which is what people talk about when you talk about conservatism. It's essentially this. Federal government has proven over and over and over again that the everyday average struggles of the American people cannot be taken care of by the government. And so let the states, if you will, the cities, if you will, take care of these things.
Because it is constitutionally not mandated, Mr. Hendry. And as a military man, I've spent my entire life in the United States Army. I know people that are in over their head when I see them, and the state of Arizona is in no position to defend its own borders. They don't have near the resources. They don't have near the individual talent in terms of Border Patrol law enforcement. They've got very good people in Arizona, but they don't have enough. They're going to begin the job of securing their own borders if the government ever made such a crazy decision. And the next thing you know, if you think you're overrun now, you would be overrun by the thousands, the gate pushed down, the fence pushed down, and border people in their Jeeps and their cars and their SUVs hightailing it, heading north, leaving a trail of dust with a mob of aliens chasing after them.
That's an asinine scenario that you just painted right there.
How do you know that I'm wrong?
Because if you cannot possibly believe anything like that if you believe that we have professional people in Arizona. Maybe they don't have enough, but something like the mob scene that you just described sounds cartoonish, and I reject it. Here is Keith in Tucson listening on KJLL. Keith, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with General Shaw. Go ahead, please.
Yes, you are way off base, and you obviously have no idea what's going on in Arizona because we are being overrun. We have the number one child abduction rate in America, and Jan Brewer is trying to do something about it.
What has that got to do with the border? That is, well, then you have to
start
chasing
after the
fathers and the husbands that are stealing the kids, not the Mexicans.
No. It is the Mexicans that are coming over, and it's the drug dealers. It's the drug cartel that is coming over, and nobody is doing anything about it.
Wait a minute. You just said that they're stealing children? They're not stealing children.
Well, how do you know that? They've got hostage taking.
They don't have children being abducted. If they had children being abducted at the rate that this man is talking about, then we would put some things aside and move some things around and get down there.
Oh, you move some things around.
How do you explain the fact that we have the number one abduction rate by far in America?
Because the fathers and the husbands and the deadbeats that don't want to pay child support are stealing their own children.
And there's only deadbeats in Arizona?
No,
there's got to be another
highest number. You have the highest number. You said the highest number, and that's what you've got, the highest number.
You've got a lot of taxes there.
And you got guys there that are stealing and abducting their own children, probably taking them out of state so they don't have to deal with the wife.
Well, you're just making a supposition, the same thing as this gentleman here.
He knows full well that child abduction is not being, and if they were Mexicans that were stealing those kids.
And look at another
question. And let me ask you this question. If it were Mexicans, how come you're letting Mexicans steal them?
They're not letting them stealing them. They're jumping the border illegally. And
I know they're doing that, but how are they getting into your backyard and stealing your kid?
They're coming in. They're drug lords. They do whatever they want.
Well, I know they're drug. I know what they are, sir, but I don't know how they're getting into your backyard while your kid is pushing a truck around the yard and then suddenly snatching him, throwing him in the trunk of a car. And how is that happening? It sounds implausible, to be perfectly honest.
And there's
well, look,
thing.
Let's get off
you know,
of that.
If you look at the state of California, they are bankrupt because they just allow immigrants to come in there freely. And that state is bankrupt because of their medical is bankrupt, and the state is bankrupt. Arizona does not want that to happen to them.
I understand that, sir, but you don't hear California getting hysterical and panicking and in Arizona, where you have people...
And look what California is doing. California is asking for Texas and Arizona to bail them out because they don't know how to manage their finances because they're just letting freeloaders from Mexico in all the time.
They're letting freeloaders coming in from Arizona and Texas.
No, they're coming in from Mexico. They're coming in from Mexico.
Well, the Californians view this, it's the same difference.
And what do you mean the same difference? What does that mean?
The deadbeat from Mexico, the deadbeat from Arizona, it's the same.
One of them's an American citizen, and we have freedom of travel, and we can move between states, okay? We don't have borders between states. And what you're talking about here is just because Californians are not panicking, you haven't made the case yet that Arizona's panicking.
Well, you heard their governor, who sounds like she needed to take a drink before that speech.
I think that's slanderous.
No, Keith.
That's what
we're
I heard.
All right,
listen,
we're
Keith.
Being proactive
well, it's
about a serious problem.
All right, listen, Keith.
States.
Keith, I want to tell you. Hey, Keith, I'd like you to hang on the line. I'm going to give you a $50 gift certificate, Keith, courtesy of our sponsor, PearlFlowers.com, so you can give that special lady in your life some flowers, brother. All right, and thanks for hanging on the line with us.
You bet.
You got it, man. Hang on. All right, proflowers.com, and this, of course, for Valentine's Day, and it's Monday, so go to proflowers.com, guys. Click on the microphone at the top right-hand corner of the screen. Type in H-E-N-D-R-I-E, and you'll get some exclusive deals, deals exclusive for my listeners, obviously, at proflowers.com.
Well, I want to make a point, Mr. Hendry. That was a young man who didn't sound very appreciative of the flowers you were giving him. He goes, you bet. I thought he was rude.
That's none of your business. We were in the middle of a very heated discussion. The next thing you know, as I'm laying flowers on him, he probably was very, very thankful and grateful and was didn't expect such a nice gift.
Well, I think it's unusual for one man to give that to another man in the middle of a discussion like this. And I'm not saying there's anything untoward about it, but I thought it took him aback for a man to say, I'd like to give you flowers now. And we've been talking about beheaded people and...
Boy, you know, a general...
No, it's not me. It's you and your choice of the venue. And you conservatives, you will not be happy until you have stripped away from the American people every protection of the United States government, and they are left on their own to have to defend their own borders, to have to defend their own towns, and we will not have it. We will not have it at all, sir.
Well, you're making a really stupid comment there, though, about that. I'm sorry, General, a really stupid comment about me giving a guy flowers.
Well, that's what I heard you do. In the middle of it, there's nothing wrong with that, but in the middle of a very heated discussion about immigration.
Yeah, I understand that, but it is a sponsor of ours, and you had no business at all talking about beheaded public officials and, you know, fences knocked over and a mob of illegals chasing our Border Patrol people like they're cowards. Our number is 877-876-7445, Radio 4 Patriots by Patriots. You know what I mean by being a patriot? You're a member of the military.
I understand the media. Yes, I understand what a patriot is.
We're being forced as a people to take matters into our own hands. Here is Chuck in Laredo, Texas. Chuck, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with General Shaw. Chuck in Laredo, Texas. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. You know, I've had this article by the Denver Reporter in the Rocky Mountain News, and she said, what if 20 million Mexican illegals left the United States? And I put it on a blog called Pie Barber Blog. And anyway, it's good dessert.
Let me ask the gentleman, the caller, do you know that you've called a radio show?
Yeah, he knows that.
Well, do you know that you're talking on a radio program? I don't know if you know that.
Yes, he knows that, and I'll take care of that. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, I don't know. He didn't.
I just can't understand. I just can't believe this guy is a general. He's misinterpreted Jan Brewer's intentions. If there's anything in her voice, it's frustration.
Well, it's not only frustration, but let me tell you, young man, I've been in the military 40 years, and I know when someone's had a pop, and I know, believe me, excuse me, sir, here is a woman who has succumbed to the panic of her people. They want the border secured because they imagine all kinds of crazy Mexicans are jumping over walls and abducting children from behind their houses. And what happened to the gentleman?
He didn't sound like he had his act together. Go ahead.
Well, I was talking to the man and saying...
No, I know, and you were saying that Jan Brewer's been taking a drink, and I got that.
Well, taking more than a drink.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Jeff in Winston-Salem. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I wasn't fortunate to hear her speech, but it sounds like to me somebody needs to get hysterical to get anything done. I mean, it's just like you want to protect your home. I mean, if people start getting illegal, I mean, you're going to have to get hysterical and get on fire to get anything done. If we wait on the government, if somebody don't stand up for their rights and start enforcing the laws, then we're going to wait too long. It's going to be too late, and more bad things are going to start happening. You have to protect borders.
But I don't want to hear grown men. I don't want to hear grown men with their voices cracking, calling into talk shows in Arizona, going. And I'll give you an example. Jeff, are you there, Jeff? Okay. Is he gone too?
Yeah, he's gone too. We got I've got to proclaim this the worst phone system probably in America. I've never had a more difficult time hearing people in my life. What were you going to say?
I was going to say to the gentleman Boy, I don't think your people are going to be happy, but you said that about the phone system.
What were you
going to
say?
I was going to say that I listened to some of the Arizona talk shows, and I hear the people, the men calling and going, I'm scared. You know, their voices are like that. And
no, meaning what? Meaning this is this panic thing.
Yes, this is the panic thing. And I would like them all to consider the fact that their wives and their children are hearing them as they call in, worried about the Mexican coming over the border to abduct their kid. And that part I didn't get at all. So.
All right. General Galen Shaw here on the Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. As we talk about the Arizona immigration situation, the illegal immigration situation, and they're countersuing the federal government. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. To the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil here, Radio for Patriots by Patriots. On the line with me is General Galen Shaw from Seattle, Washington. Where are you, General?
I'm in Washington, D.C. right now.
But you live in Washington State.
I live in Washington State part of the year. The other part of the year, I am in the nation's capital. But I do live in Bellevue, in Washington State, part of the year. Yes.
And so you say that you live in a border state. Do you see that as a legitimate border state in terms of this immigration issue?
I think every border state, and I think the entire country, needs to be viewed from the standpoint that the country needs to be protected. And I don't think that any state. That borders a foreign country should be looked at with suspicion or be seen as a state that does not get the attention of the federal government. This is why I've been amazed at the people in Arizona and elsewhere who feel that they need this attention. Now, you heard the man say... And
the Arizona needs the attention because they're on the border with a country that has an out-of-control drug problem and drug crime problem, and they are trafficking this stuff, and the state itself seems to feel that they need this assistance.
Well, I heard the man say that they have the number one child abduction problem, but he did not say, and this is where a clear and concise voice is very important, and as a conservative, Mr. Henry, you cannot hang your hat on statistics that don't exist. And you cannot say that the child abduction problem in Arizona is caused by illegal immigrants. And
well, the dialogue in Arizona has gotten to the point now where people are worried for their safety. Now, there have been people killed. You can't deny that. And if they're worried about the abduction of their children, they're worried about the abduction of their children. There are kidnappings in Mexico.
Yeah, there are kidnappings in Mexico, but there's no evidence at all that drug warlords and these bandidos are coming across the border, the international boundary between the United States and Canada, or the United States and Mexico, rather. And when I say United States and Canada, why can't we have the same problem as they have in Mexico? Do we? I thank God and I knock wood that we don't. But there is no reason at all, not to assume that at some point we could have a similar problem with Canada with regard to the methamphetamine that is used very, very frequently up there, with regard to the laundering of money and so forth. So in Mexico, you have a different problem.
You know, you're going on and on here, man. I don't know what you're trying to say, you know. But you're talking about Canada and methamphetamine. What we're talking about here is Mexico.
What I'm trying to say, I'm trying to tell you that the border between the United States and Canada can be equally as dangerous as the border between.
Okay, it can be, but is it?
I'm not willing to say that it isn't. I'm not willing to say that if I live on the border between Canada and the United States, and when I say on the border now, I mean within a mile or two of the border, that my family can be safe at night from any kind of individual from Canada where they do have this methamphetamine problem, an individual wandering across the international boundary at a remote spot where there is no border patrol or border guard, an individual who has used enough of this methamphetamine to the point where he is now disoriented. His skin is drawn back, his lips and mouth dry, his eyes protruding from his skull, bloodshot, and his fingers so emaciated they look like claws as he creeps through the woods on a moonlit night.
Okay, that's about all I can take.
That's a pretty bitchin' story, though.
Oh, that might have been a real bitchin' story, but that nut's talking about what?
You talking about like a methamphetamine? Man!
Some guy on methamphetamine creeping through the woods on a moonlit night?
You go back online, too.
Hey, General, what's the point here?
Did you hang up on me?
Yes, I hung up on you.
Where do you get the temerity to do that, to hang up on me when I was talking to you about an international situation, something between the borders of our countries? And
you were talking to me about, or you were talking to my audience a moment ago, about a guy that's doing so much methamphetamine, his fingers are like claws, his eyes bulging from his skull, he's wandered across the Canadian border in the middle of the night, going through the forest with a moonlit night, and what's he going to do?
And then I was going to say, he turns himself in to the nearest hospital and gets treatment. But you didn't want to wait for that, did you?
No, that's not what you were going
to
say.
Yes, I was. I was going to say, then he just walks up to a hospital and says, please help me. Canadian health care doesn't work. But you wouldn't wait for that, would you? You thought that he was going to abduct a child, perhaps abduct a child, and cannibalize it. You didn't wait for what actually would happen, which would be him turning himself into a hospital, proclaiming his love of America, and he hates Canadian health care.
Well, isn't that something that you would, that wouldn't be good, would it?
No, because we don't want Canadian health care. We want Obamacare. See, so you stepped in it every which way. You pulled your foot up, and you might as well hose it off, because no bounty towel is going to wipe it off sufficiently.
All right, General, well, thank you for being with us.
Well, yeah, but you blew it, and I don't think you made your point, and you blew it for me when I was going to say the guy was turning himself
into a hospital instead of going and abducting a child and cannibalizing it.
That's correct.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Phil.
General Galen Shaw, who I think there's something wrong with him.
Well, I mean, he made a good point, you know, about a methamphetamine in Canada. I don't know if that's really bad or not. But if a methamphetamine addict wandered across the international border and is swooped down on a home in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he might want to carry off the kid and sell it for methamphetamine money.
You're telling me some kind of wild-eyed meth freak from Canada swoops down on a family in the middle of the night?
If they're at the international border, like the general was saying, and there ain't no federal officers around.
Abducts a kid, and then what?
Sells a kid for the money, what he'll need for methamphetamine.
And where do you go to sell a kid like that?
Well, he's selling in Mexico.
Selling in Mexico. So he's up at the Canadian border.
Well, you'd have to steal a car.
Yeah, the director of national intelligence claims the Muslim Brotherhood is secular. We'll talk about it in the news hour with Bud Dickman. You just heard him, and Robert Leonard. You just heard him. 877-876-7445. Shot glasses, best of CDs, blogs, and archives at philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
After speaking with her, after looking at the emails, after trying to see if
it was... I think this guy, he doesn't want to leave it in D.C. He doesn't...
Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term.
I am left with no other choice. So today...
When you're really ready to play from Nevada.
That's very tough to swallow.
Famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots, a patriotic conservative radio program that is trying to save this country from a cabal of liberals and their liberal think who do nothing but attach themselves vampire-like to the American taxpayer and drain every last dollar from that individual, from that individual family, from that individual small business, from that individual larger business, from the individual who is a good earner and an individual who's made a lot of money in his life and maybe packed it away into retirement and something else, large companies, it doesn't matter, that the liberal in charge of Washington today has attached itself to the American taxpayer like a vampire in the night. And when you awaken in the morning, if you awaken in the morning, you have no strength at all. You have no economic strength, no economic will, in fact. And you are further and further and further in debt, enslaved to, as they say in the movies, the master. On this program, we try to spread a little garlic around, you know.
Yeah, try to put a cross, you know.
Yeah, burn a cross in the door or something, man. Or what else do they use?
Yeah, a lot of holy water.
Holy water. This program is holy water, garlic, and a cross for the bloodsucker. The bloodsucker that Washington, D.C. has become. And you know as well as I do. You're not, you know, you guys learned a long time ago, as I did, that we have congresspeople on both sides of that aisle, as they like to say, Republican and Democrat, who are in love with the blood-sucking. So let's not be fooled. When we talk about somebody who has gone to Washington, we talk about an individual that we sent off in much the way they used to send people off to Washington in the old days. Did you ever see the John Adams?
Yeah, the John Adams miniseries.
Yeah, when they sent John Adams off to the Continental Congress, and they feeded him, and they had horns blowing, and they had bands playing, and they had confetti, and there was Samuel Adams, and he had his little carriage, and they were very proud, and they were very happy to go off to the Continental Congress. And that's how we send our people off. And what do we get back? A thing. The undead. Someone who's been converted into a bloodsucker. So you got to protect yourself, and the way to protect yourself is simply this. Recognize, have both eyes open, and see what it is you're dealing with. And also, of course, hit us up on our Patriot line at 877-876-7445 so we can talk about some of the madness, as long as you're aware of it, as long as you're aware of the madness, as long as you're aware of the fact that the asylum, the doors have been opened to the asylum, and we are now sort of surrounded by the nuts, you know. And there's that old story about the townspeople drank from the well. Did you hear the story of the townspeople drinking from the well?
Uh-oh.
And they went mad one day. The townspeople drank from the well, and they went insane. And the king was beside himself with grief and worry. He didn't know what to do, and the townspeople were crazy, and they saw this king as mad people would see a king, someone who is out to get him. Until one day the king drank from the well, and the people rejoiced and said, "Our king has returned to us."
What are you saying, and the Obama?
I'm not saying anything, man, okay? Just I thought it was a nice story, that's all.
Oh. I'm saying that we drank from the well.
Never mind about the well. It's just a... Listen to this. Guantanamo Bay detainees may get an invite to Berkeley. Is there anything you guys at Berkeley haven't done? Can we suggest some things? Let's see. You have insulted the U.S. Marines. And I know that you do it for attention. I know you do it so that you can continue to make that constant claim there in San Francisco, in Berkeley, in the East Bay. So that constant claim that you are somehow different. You stand apart. That you are the last vestiges of the... I don't know what you want to call it, the counterculture of the 60s. I don't want to say hippie, because I think there's a lot of people who currently are of that ilk in Northern California and elsewhere that probably weren't old enough to be hippies. I think they fell in love with the idea that there was a Vietnam sort of era counterculture, and they didn't get a part of it, and so they want to be a part of it now. I mean, that kind of quote-unquote lame-ass politics. So, we've insulted the U.S. Marines. I don't know what else you've done, but now Guantanamo Bay detainees might have a new home in the United States, Berkeley. The city council is to vote on February the 15th on a resolution to invite detainees who have been cleared of wrongdoing to resettle within Berkeley's sunny confines. Why don't they go home?
That's what my point was.
Why don't they go home, Berkeley? Why are you inviting them there? Why are you inviting these people to your town? If they've been cleared of wrongdoing, I understand they can go anywhere. But why? What is the special thing you got for these cats? I know. You want to show them that America really is a cool place, and that our government isn't a fascist. You know that this, we are not necessarily the fascist goose stepping bastards that our government is. Is that it?
That's probably what they mean.
Well, what does that mean? You know, in a fascist state, the people goose step too. You know, so if they go up and they're living the life in Berkeley, then they're going to think America's a really cool place. They're going to want to stay, and they're going to become more liberal, and they're going to join your city council, and then I'm really going to be pissed off.
Yeah, but you know what? If they join the city council, that don't mean they're going to blow nothing up.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe they will blow something up. They got all the freedom to do whatever the hell it is that they want. Maybe they're going to, you know what, as long as they're up in Berkeley with all of these people that are laying all this love on them, maybe they'll figure this is a perfect opportunity to make themselves a dirty bomb.
Now, you can't say that.
I don't know. Guantanamo Bay detainees may have a new home. Berkeley, the city council is to vote on the 15th on a resolution to invite detainees who have been cleared of wrongdoing to resettle within Berkeley's sunny confines. What do you mean sunny? What does that mean, sunny confines? What's that?
Well, it's sunny up there.
No, it ain't, man. It's not sunnier than down here. I mean, I like the Bay Area and everything, man, but, you know, Berkeley's like fogged in just like San Francisco. It's colder and foggier and funkier up there than it is down here.
Well, you want to come down here?
Yeah, I would. Why don't you guys settle down here? I got a real nice place for you. You know, someplace where no one's going to mess with you.
Yeah, I bet you do, man, out in the woods where nobody can hear you scream.
Right. In the desert, no one can hear you scream. I better not say that. That's not nice. Of the 38 detainees who've been cleared, Berkeley would invite two, a Russian ballet dancer and an Algerian who was a top-rated Italian chef in Austria. Our hearts are with all those people who were never tried, held for years, and in some cases tortured, said Wendy Kennan, chairwoman of the Dumbasses for Peace and Justice in Berkeley. Although I don't have any proof of that torture thing, why not just say it because everyone accepts it as true, said Wendy. And as we like to say on this show, you know, waterboarding is such torture. Do you know anybody that hasn't been waterboarded? Everybody in the press has been waterboarded. Christopher Hitchens got waterboarded. Every talk show host I know, Mancow got waterboarded. I think Bill Handel got waterboarded. I wanted to get waterboarded, but Dale Dye, our very close personal friend, didn't want to waterboard me because he thought I'd die.
Yeah, he thought you'd die of a heart attack or something, man.
he's going to waterboard you? He thought you'd die from it, huh?
Yeah. I said, Dale, why don't you... Dale would be a guy I'd trust to waterboard me, even though, you know, waterboarding is you feel like you're drowning. So he said, no, I don't want to do it to you. So Wendy Kennan, chairwoman of the city's Peace and Justice and Love and Flowers and Groovy Things Commission, said, our hearts are with all those people. Your hearts? Really? You don't even know them. I bet you don't think 1 minute about them, Wendy. I bet you think about that Russian ballet dancer and the Algerian who's a top-rated Italian chef because you got just the right restaurant that you'd like to see him in, your favorite, the place where you have a corner booth, and then the Russian ballet dancer, who knows what you got in mind for him.
Yeah, probably worse than waterboarding.
I'll bet.
Yeah, that bitch probably want to guy do a ballet, all right. A ballet right on.
All right, watch it. Anyway, the two would move to Berkeley and live with local families. Nonprofits would help them find work. Oh, really? Well, wait a minute. He's a Russian ballet dancer. What do you mean, find work? You got to put him to work as a ballet dancer. Otherwise, you don't give him no dignity, the dignity what he's entitled to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to have a ballet. Don't they have a ballet company?
San Francisco's got a ballet company, the San Francisco Ballet. All big cities have a ballet company of some kind. Los Angeles has a ballet company. I mean, Houston, New York, they all have ballet companies.
Berkeley with a ballet.
God, spit it out, man.
No kidding, man. What are you saying?
I said it's Berkeley Ballet.
I don't think Berkeley's got a ballet. I think San Francisco's got a ballet. I can't even believe we're talking about this. However, if the people of Berkeley want to embrace the Russian ballet dancer, and I think it would be justice, beautiful justice if the Russian ballet dancer got to Berkeley and decided, you know, he didn't want to be a ballet dancer anymore, that he'd just as soon I don't know, probably start, like, you know, working a club as a DJ. Anyway, the two would move to Berkeley and live with local families. Hopefully they won't steal from them, but you never know. Berkeley would not spend any money from its general fund on the plan, which shows you how cheap they are up there. I'm kidding, but why wouldn't you? Now, they're going to use nonprofits. So Berkeley will say, yeah, come on up here, but then the nonprofits would pay for it. The plan, however, could hit a roadblock with the Department of Defense. The Eichel-Skelton National Defense Authorization Act of 2011, signed by President Obama on January the 7th, a president that was voted for by many progressives and I'm sure members of the Berkeley City Council, as well as everybody in coat pink. And all of a sudden, the president's saying, hey, slow it down. President Obama, I'm telling you, everything I predicted about that guy came true. He pissed off more liberals than he ever pissed off conservatives. Prohibits the United States from funding the relocation of cleared detainees. It prohibits the United States. But this is a not-for-profit that has nothing to do with the U.S. government. So that leaves the detainees in limbo. They have no passports, no visas, no money, and no jurisdiction that wants them. Why don't you have passports or visas or money? Why did they not have that?
Did they take it from them?
No, they didn't take it from them. They didn't have any passports. They didn't have any visas. They didn't have anything because they are not members of any recognized fighting force. They're not members of any recognized, the citizens of any recognized country. They're not members of any recognized military unit. They are quite beyond the definition of international law, which is what some of us have been trying to say for years and years and years and years. And nobody wants to talk about that. So now here they are. They got no visas, no nothing, because they intended that to be the case. And no one wants them. But Berkeley and a few cities in Massachusetts that have passed similar resolutions, they can't return to their native countries for fear of harassment or torture. Well, really? Berkeley's newest residents would include Daniel something, or no, this guy's name I can't pronounce it, an Algerian chef who worked at an upscale Italian restaurant in Vienna. After his work visa was not renewed, he went to Canada but was not granted asylum. Feeling he had few places to go, he moved to Afghanistan, was arrested while crossing into Pakistan in 2002, trying to escape the violence, according to the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York. Afghanistan? Why would you go to Afghanistan in the middle of a war?
That's a good point.
Why would you go to Afghanistan in the middle of a war? Mr. Mizian is college-educated, speaks several languages, loves to draw and paint. He reads mystery novels, and he's just all that in a bag of pork rinds, said J. Wells Dixon, senior attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, which is working on his case. Well, you guys better work a little harder there, Mr. What's your name? Dixon, get your ass in gear and get this guy a place to live, okay? He's out, he's free, he's cool, everything's groovy. He's not a tortured terrorist guy. So get your ass in gear there at the Center of Constitutional Rights and show us how it's done, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
Show us how it's done, man. Or is it some other problem? That's the thing. A lot of these guys will get out of detention there in Guantanamo, and all of these people with the milk of human kindness in their veins will try to help them. And saying, you know, all of a sudden it's going to be kind of tough. Well, why is that? I'll tell you why. Because the very people going to try to help them don't trust them as far as they could throw them either.
Wow.
All right, we'll be back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show, and this. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. We'll be talking a little bit more about the Clarence Thomas situation. You know, a guy who's a conservative justice and his wife is a conservative, so he better just not be involved in any health care debate. And some other ridiculous laws like ticketing the homeless. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is radio for Patriots, by Patriots, and our Patriot hotline is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Don't forget our website. Get a backstage pass. Watch the live-streaming video, the live-streaming audio, and the archives and the podcasts. It's a fun place. It's really, truly, it's a fun place. And when you go there and talk about the money, the entertainment that you get on our website is a beautiful thing. So check it out, philhendryshow.com. Clayprimnevada.com. And coming up later this month, we begin to, well, there's going to be a lot of exciting things happening to the video aspect of the Phil Henry program. Right now, we've got the probably the best quality video picture of any radio show out there. And I'm being very serious. Even Rush, and I love Rush. But and I love Mark Levin, and I love, you know, Glenn, all those cats. But none of them have got the picture quality that we've got on our live streaming video. And we're going to have a multi-camera approach. We're going to have
you're gonna have like special effects and everything.
We're going to have special effects. I'm going to be doing the show while on water skis. No, I'm kidding about that.
Yeah, but you're going to have like the picture of like Afghanistan or something.
I'm going to have what?
You said, are you going to have a picture of Afghanistan?
A picture of Afghanistan?
Yeah, it looked like you're doing a show in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I could do that. I could have Afghanistan behind me. We're going to have another as well, a blue screen or green screen, whatever color we decide.
You have like a blue screen so you could stand and do the weather.
I'm not going to stand and do the weather, but yeah, I guess I could. What are you, nuts? What is that? Over standard? Hi, welcome to the radio show. Now, here in Chicago. Anyway, so just the, you know, we're kind of building out the presentation here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number, 877-876-7445, our Patriot hotline. Now, did I do the Guantanamo Bay thing already? I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Did I do Guantanamo Bay? Yeah, I already did Guantanamo Bay. What am I doing? I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to get more into Thomas, but I was going to hold off on that. I'm completely discombobulated. What story are we doing here, man?
No, let me find out.
The homeless. Okay, homeless in San Diego. It's kind of goofy. I don't know whether I wanted to do that story or not because it's sounds kind of whack, but who knows? Let's give it a shot. I don't know. They're going to ticket the homeless. The city of San Diego will be changing the way it enforces laws against homeless people sleeping on the streets. Now, they got a problem in San Diego, in a section of San Diego, North Park, or an area that borders North Park, where they have random attacks. I mean, people have been attacked. So I don't know if it's homeless people or not. I heard one guy say, yeah, I got the crap kicked out of me, and I think it was homeless guys. You know how some people are, you know? They can say that they think it was a homeless guy, maybe it wasn't. But the point being, city of San Diego will be changing the way it enforces laws against homeless people sleeping on the street. For the past 6 years, the city's not been able to enforce its illegal lodging ordinance because of a lawsuit filed on behalf of the homeless. According to city officials, on any given night, there could be upwards of 1,000 people sleeping on downtown streets. Their shopping carts, tents, and bags mark their sleeping spots during the daytime hours. Now, under a new settlement announced Wednesday by City Attorney Jan Goldsmith, the rules have changed. This will be good for downtown, this will be good for taxpayers, and this will be good for the homeless, he said. The city will now be able to ticket a homeless person sleeping on the streets between 9 p.m. and 5:30 a.m. if a shelter bed is available and the person refuses it. Now, that makes sense. Channel 10 News spoke with homeless people in the East Village of San Diego who say they don't always want a helping hand. That's stupid. You can't force a person to take help because that's what you want them to do. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can. You can pass an ordinance saying you can't sleep on a street. Now, you can say, as a homeless person, I'm suing because I want to sleep on it. Well, you don't get to sleep on a street. You can sue and say that you want to sleep on a military base. You can sue and say that you want to sleep on top of a private building. There's some areas you don't get to sleep. And the public has decided that you don't get to sleep out on the street. Well, that's not fair. It isn't? How about a bed? Well, there are no beds. If we find that there are beds available in the city, beds at shelters available in the city, and you're not sleeping in that bed, instead you're out on the street, you get a ticket. I like that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Otherwise, you know, people out on the street say, hey, there's a bed right across the street. Why aren't you in that? And they'll say, oh, I didn't know it was there, you know.
Well, they can walk across the street and say, here's the bed right here. Oh, I didn't know it was there. I would have, yeah. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be back with more here. Website, philhenryshow.com. Republicans promise to cut $100 billion in spending. We'll see. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. Phil Henry here with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard as we continue to fight the good fight here for an American public that has had the siphon stuck in there you-know-what long enough. Wherever you siphon whatever you're siphoning, you know.
Yeah.
Republicans now are promising $100 billion in spending cuts. Now, you can't say that you're promising $100 billion in spending cuts and you're not delivering $100 billion in spending cuts. And by the way, don't say that you're going to deliver $100 billion in spending cuts. You understand that the Patriot Act, which President Bush took all kinds of crap for, I mean, the Patriot Act was the reason that Bush was called a Hitler. It was the reason that Bush was called a war criminal. It was the reason that Bush was called, you know, an autocrat. It was the reason. My God, if the left didn't have the Patriot Act, about 90% of the things that they were talking about and worrying about, supposedly, during the Bush years, would have been gone. They wrapped their legs around that Patriot Act, man, and rode that the way they're, pardon the expression, the way they're wrapping their legs around Sarah Palin and riding that one.
Yeah, they are, man. Get the Patriot Act to Sarah Palin.
Now what happens? Now we have a president in President Obama who wants to extend that. The Holder Justice Department wants to extend the Patriot Act. They want the protections provided for in the Patriot Act. And there's lots of people that say that there are constitutional questions regarding the Patriot Act, but in the year after year after year after year that the Patriot Act has been in existence, we're not able to find the constitutional compromises in that Patriot Act. Oh, sure, there's a section of it here, and there's another section of it over there. I mean, these guys, people that were out, when you set out to vilify a human being because you just don't like the direction he's taking the country, when you set out to vilify someone, not because the policies that he enacts are wrong, but because you just don't like him and you don't like what he represents, you wind up sooner or later looking like a horse's ass. And if you progressives and liberals out there don't think you look like a complete jackass saying that George Bush was a war criminal, but, you know, let's extend the Patriot Act. Or, worse yet, George Bush was a war criminal, but you know what? I don't like Obama either.
Yeah, man, after they all were lining up to vote for him and everything.
Yeah, they loved Obama before he got elected.
Right. But, oh, well, all of a sudden now, Obama ain't getting the job done. And we're just having a real tough luck with presidents these days, aren't we? Are we having a tough luck with presidents these days? Or is the world just getting kind of scary and tough to live in these days? Well, I know. The world is tough to live in and it's scary because of presidents. Maybe that's it. The world is tough to live in, and it's scary sometimes, regardless of who the hell the president is. That's the answer to the question, but it's a little too simple. And sometimes we can find the answers that way. However, I digress. Point being, when you say you're going to do something, you got to do it. Now, you clowns, and excuse me for saying this, but you Republicans in the House were asked to vote to extend the Patriot Act, and you couldn't get it done. What's your problem? What's your problem, man?
Yeah, what was the problem?
Well, John Boehner, he ain't all that, I guess, because the Patriot Act was one of, I believe, one of the shining moments for the Bush administration at a time when nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew how to protect this country from this new threat. No one had any idea of what direction to go in. People were walking around with their head in their hands. It was a nightmare. And slowly, we cobbled together some kind of a way to proceed in a free society. And every step of the way, it was questioned. Every step of the way, the constitutionality of this and that. And it wasn't just questioned. I mean, every step of the way, Bush is another example of what a war criminal he is. And every step of the way, is another example of what a jackball he is. And every step of the way, we had a new reason to hate the guy. And I'm going to tell you something right now. You know, Barack Obama may be a lot of things, but that man stood on the steps of the Capitol there, and he was waving to George Bush's helicopter as it was flying away. And I remember thinking, Obama is waving and thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? I got to take over now. So he wanted, for whatever reason, to extend the Patriot Act. And so did the Holder Justice Department, and the Republicans in the House couldn't get that one done. And the only guy you blame for that is Boehner. So what I suggest you do, Mr. Speaker, is you better back up and take another couple of runs at this thing. Because I just heard where the top Republican on the House Appropriations Committee now says that the fight to cut spending could lead to a government shutdown. This is Mike Simpson. And he's talking some tough stuff. He says, I know that that's not something leadership wants to do. Is it a possibility? Yes, it's a possibility. But we're going to do everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen. Simpson, who chairs the House Appropriations Subcommittee, is the highest-ranking Republican. Conservatives are forcing the House GOP leaders to cut more spending this year than they had planned in order to live up to the Republican pledge to cut $100 billion in spending before the end of the year. And they are forcing you to live up to this pledge. Now, either you're going to do it or you guys aren't worth... You're not worth the polish you put on your shoes in the morning. Don't say it and then not do it. It was already going to be hard to negotiate whatever spending cuts come out of the House with the Democratic-led Senate. With even deeper cuts, it will be more difficult to come to an agreement on a spending bill. The current government funding bill expires on March the 4th. There's an awful lot of members of our conference who said, no, I committed to cutting $100 billion, Simpson said. Why would you guys commit to something like that? And then all of a sudden, don't you open, we're so tired of you people opening your mouths. And now I'm talking a Republican, can't just keep borrowing the dollars so that the debt, we're pushing it back, man. You know, it's not a 30-year lease, it's not an 80-year lease, it's a 150-year lease. Or it's a 150-year mortgage. That's causing tension inside the new House Republican majority as GOP leaders were getting their first taste of how hard it is to control the new Republican lawmakers demanding their leadership live up to campaign promises. What, Bud?
Well, I mean, what if they're Republicans, why aren't they going to do it?
Because some of them are conservative and they don't want to, they're forcing it. You know,
well, yeah, I mean, these cats got elected in this most recent congressional election, and they are dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. They are apart from the entrenched Republicans that are currently in the House. They're demanding that the leadership live up to this pledge of cutting spending. House GOP leaders met on Thursday afternoon with freshman Republicans to go over ideas for additional spending cuts, and later the whole Republican conference met to discuss the divisive issue. So you've got some traditional Republicans there that don't want to do it.
Yeah, but if you're in the Republicans...
Well, I mean, look, here's something the American people don't get. And I know that, people would say, well, why has it got to be that way? Well, I mean, you're going back 200 years. When you've got a Congress and you've got a leadership, a Republican leadership, that's been around for a long time in Washington, and now you bring in a bunch of these fresh-faced guys, these conservatives from all these districts, and they're coming in to kick some ass, they're up against a leadership that does things a different way. They're up against a leadership that says, well, we'll just, hear from you guys. You guys take your seats because we have some other things we want to talk about. And this is not the... So the way these guys are rushing in there, man, and wanting to get this stuff done is not the way they do it. I'm not saying that they're wrong. I think that they should. I think that they should say to the leadership, the way you guys do things, man, stinks.
Yeah, but I'm going to have to tell John Boehner.
Well, it would be embarrassing for John Boehner to go up against these Republican freshmen who want these $100 billion in spending cuts enforced, and it'd be a very, very clear split between the leader of the Republican Party and this new class of freshman congresspeople.
Yeah, but that's what the people want to do.
Well, I agree with you, man. I agree with you. But to get things done as a party... And you see where your Republican leader looks like a horse's ass because the freshmen are forcing him into this decision. You make the cat look, unless he wants to commit right along with him, Boehner can do that,
I don't know what you mean.
What do you mean you don't know what I mean?
What do you mean you're going to look like a horse's ass?
If he doesn't want to do this $100 billion spending cuts, like these congressional freshmen do. I agree with them. I think they should do it. I think Boehner ought to just go ahead and swallow it. And that's where that's at, man. I mean, you can't, you know, the times, these are difficult times, and these are dangerous times, and they're requiring some difficult and dangerous things to do. So, you know, don't bother me with that horse dung. Now,
yeah, but are they going to do it?
I don't know, but I'm telling you, that's what they ought to do. But if they got to go up against Boehner, you know, and they got to make him look like a bad guy, then make him look like a bad guy. I wonder if they got the guts to go through with it. That's my question. All right, now, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak has refused to step down. It was a big speech today. He refused to step down, but he said in a nationally televised speech that he would hand more authority to his vice president, this guy Suleiman. A move that drew rage and bewilderment from hundreds of thousands of protesters packed into Cairo's Tahrir Square. Now, this is all well and good. Now, none of this has any meaning or interest for the American people except for one thing and one thing only. What happens after Mubarak leaves?
Yeah, that's going to be the Muslim Brotherhood and everything.
Well, here's the thing. American foreign policy has, it seems, always had to contend with this monolithic opponent represented either in the face of communist, militarist, monarchies, kingdoms. We've always, as a country, found ourselves at odds with some large, staid form of governance that we stand against. It was communism for many years. Before that, it was the emperors of Europe. I mean, one of the things we did early on, and I say early on, in the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln said to the French, because what the French did, they pulled a fast one on us. This is one of the reasons why maybe some people, I don't know, it's probably not why people don't like French, but it's this thing between us and the French goes way back. We're in the middle of a civil war, and what do the French try to pull? They send into Mexico an archduke who's Austrian, and he's going to become the new emperor of Mexico. And he's going to be at the the emperor of Mexico, installed by the French, and he's going to sort of do the bidding of the French, but he's going to be the emperor of Mexico. His name was Maximilian. Now, when do you think they pulled this?
Well, are they doing it in the Civil War?
They did it in the Civil War. Now, they did two things to piss off Lincoln. Number one, that's a violation of the Monroe Doctrine at a time when the Monroe Doctrine really meant something, because Europe was trying to establish its Europe was still trying to extend its colonial reach into the New World. It was still trying to set up colonies. And here are the French turning Mexico into a fiefdom. That's number one. Number two, the thing that really pissed Lincoln off, they did it in the middle of a war the United States was having with itself, a civil war. Now, we were backing in Mexico, and Lincoln was, and the U.S. government was backing a native Mexican uprising led by one of the greatest of all Mexicans. And guess what? I forget his name.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I do. It's like, I don't know why, but I forget that, you know, I should know, but I forget. And his name is on the tip of the tongue, of the tips of every Mexican's tongue. He's like almost like a George Washington himself. But Lincoln said to the French, he said, you know, you can't, oh, you pissed me off now. Oh, yeah. When this civil war is over, I'm going to have about 500,000 to 1 million men who are battle hardened, who are veterans of a long and bloody war, and I'm going to put them down into Mexico, and I'm going to kick that Kenya stuck in there, out of there. That was essentially his message to Napoleon, Napoleon III, who was running France at the time. The United States has always stood against these monolithic efforts, and one of them is the Islamist. Now, we don't know anything about these guys. Yes, we've stood against autocrats when it was, for instance, in the case of Benito Juarez, thank you very much, Jason. Benito Juarez, who did become the president of Mexico and is considered to be one of the great fathers of Mexico, that poor, tortured country, a great country, a beautiful country, and a country that deserves so much better from its leaders than it's getting. I mean, the Mexican government. Anyway, We also stood against the emperors and the communists. And now we have Islamists. And one of the things that America has never really found to be all that pressing are these ten-horn dictators around the world. In other words, are we going to go up against a guy like Somoza in Nicaragua? A guy is holding down the fort for us in Central America. Yeah, that's right. And you progressives and liberals who love to, you know, quote Noam Chomsky and say things like, you see, this is the blowback we're getting from our colonialist. You don't know the first thing about colonialism. What the United States of America has done since its very birth is what it's about. The U.S. goes out, business people from the U.S. go out, and we look for markets. And it ain't anything that the French haven't done, or the British haven't done, or the Russians haven't done, or the Germans haven't done. It isn't anything that any other developed nation hasn't done. But because we're a big target, everybody sees the big bullseye on our back and goes after us, and they think we created this world. My God, when we went into Iraq, you know what we found? We found missiles made in France. You think the frogs got any heat for that? Oh, no, they're not going to get heat for that, man, because they're the French. They're the civilized French. Thank God for Sarkozy, because when he got elected, I realized the French are not that stupid. So the United States will, at times, use the dictator. We used Hussein, and when we were done with him, out he goes. We used Noriega, and I got no problem with that, because you want to know why? I believe in my country, first, last, and always. We were not using individuals that were representatives of fantastic governments with all of these marvelous democratic principles. We're using autocrats and dictators and tin horns so that we can get done what we want to get done. Is it cynical of me to talk to you like this? No, that's the reality of the world. I don't care who you want to talk to. That's exactly what happens. Now, Mubarak is useful. Why? Number one, they've got a peace treaty with a very good friend of ours, Israel. Israel's had our back on a lot of stuff, man. A lot of stuff. And we've had their back. And they ain't going to change. Obama has said that we're with them for the next 150, 400 years. That's good enough for me. Any president that we have needs to stand with Israel. Mubarak and Egypt, in the person of Anwar Sadat, signed that peace treaty with Israel. That needs to stand. So Mubarak, insofar as that can continue, needs to be where he is. Now, is he constitutionally empowered to do the things he's doing? I don't think so. So he's going to get a lot of heat from his own people. At what point, if this guy's going down, do we cut our ties with him? Is the question. All right, we'll be back to sum it up, man. I got some audio to play from his speech, too. World famous Phil Hendry Show. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots, and our website, philhendryshow.com.
Phil.
That's Hendry. Pretty interesting, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you.
For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com. World-famous...
Why don't you tell about the rest of it?
All right, well, so Bud wants to know, he wants to know the rest of it?
Yeah.
All right, well, the rest of it, we're talking about the Maximilian, the emperor of Mexico, and, you know, how America has dealt down through the years. And so the French put this emperor in here, and we're in the middle of a civil war. Lincoln says, no way, no way, no way, baby. And they went ahead and did it anyway, because who the hell are you going to tell me? I'm the emperor of, I'm the king of France. I'm sticking this guy down there, and that's where it is. So what we did is we were sending guns and other supplies to Benito Juarez, who was the one of the fathers of the Mexican nation. And Juarez, duly armed, eventually did make his way to Mexico City, apprehended Maximilian. And Emperor Maximilian was not a bad guy. He wanted to be a Mexican. He wanted to lead the Mexican people. But he was not a very sophisticated guy. He didn't know what he was up against. He didn't know that he'd been used. And Benito Juarez had him executed. He was shot and killed, along with, I believe, some generals and some other people. And it wasn't because Juarez was a maniac or an animal. Juarez did that with a very, very specific reason in mind. Juarez did that because he wanted to send a message to Europe. He said, don't you ever do this again. Don't send your emperors. Don't send your kings. This is what's going to happen. So Juarez was sending a very specific message to Europe. Emperors and kings that you send over here will be shot on sight. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rance. Technical director, of course, is Rick Johnson, and our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. This is radio for patriots, by patriots, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What are you doing with Maximilian?
I just told you what they did to Maximilian. They shot him.
The whole thing, you didn't hear that?
No, I missed it.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you missed it.
Phil Hendry.